AudioStrategies.com has produced this audio clip. For more information, call us at 802-744-2015.
Welcome to today's program, Selling the Brand When It's You. I'm Nancy Gerber, Program Coordinator for the Education Division of Practice Pay Solutions. We provide payment solutions and other resources for professionals growing their businesses on the web. You can find us at www.practicepaysolutions.com. Thanks for joining us. It's my pleasure to introduce today's expert, Deborah Valley. Deborah is a nationally known speaker, seminar leader, branding strategist. She's also a professional certified coach, author, and president and founder of Marketing You, Inc. She delivers her unique branding message through business coaching, seminars, workshops, teleclasses, and her monthly e-newsletter, Fuel for Marketing You. Her background includes an 18-year career where she was responsible for brand positioning, strategic planning, advertising, and direct marketing for companies such as, companies as diverse as Michigan Opera, Chrysler, Mazda, and Nestle. She's a member of the International Coach Federation and on the leadership team for the Orange County ICF chapter. Deb, welcome. It is a pleasure to be speaking with you today.
Oh, thank you, Nancy. I'm just delighted to be here.
Well, good. Let's just jump right in and start. Let's start with a very basic question. Why would a solopreneur need to establish a brand?
That's a great question. And, Nancy, let me throw it back to you. Why would a cattle rancher brand a cow?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah, it's because it's to create some distinction between one cow from another cow, right? To understand who belongs to who. It's the same reason that corporations brand their businesses. In the end of the day, we're trying to create distinction. And when all cows look the same, it sometimes is that mark.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that separates us from all others. And that's why we want to do it as a home-based business or a solopreneur. We need to create some kind of, symbol, brand, message that allows us to separate us from all our competitors, separate us from the pack.
Mm. Yeah, I think that point of separating from the pack is a really important one. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's sort of self-evident, I think, isn't it, that we need to establish our brand. So let's talk about how we can create or develop our brand. And first of all, most of the people who are listening to this are coaches or speakers or some other kind of service provider, solo entrepreneur, for the most part. And how do we create in such a big marketplace with so many other people doing the same things as we're doing, how do we create distinction for our brand?
Right, thanks, yeah. You know, I work with solopreneurs and probably have helped create personal brand messages for over 500 individuals in the last, 4 years or so. And I think what happens is that people, because they're such little businesses, don't believe that they have the opportunity to use sort of the same strategies that we used on Madison Avenue.
Uh-huh.
But it's absolutely not correct. What, you know, to create a unique brand message or, you know, a compelling message that grabs the attention of your ideal target audience is just a simple process. It's the same process that we used in advertising. And, you know, if I could get you, Nancy, to at this moment just draw four interlinking circles.
Uh-huh.
The places that we look as brand advertisers trying to find that distinctive message is in this sort of a place of overlap, what I call.
Uh-huh.
So first we look at our innate strengths. We look at our raving fans. Those would be two different circles. We look at what our competitors are doing, and we look at and really define for ourselves how we want to be perceived. That is, you know, what we want our reputation to be about in the future.
Mm.
And looking at those four different areas, and you can see that little place where your circles overlap, your brand, your most unique and most compelling, maybe perhaps your most provocative message for your business sits in that place of overlap. And so it's just you know, what I like to provide for my clients is an opportunity to incubate for a while, to take the time to think in advance how it is you will be shaping, you know, the perception of your business.
You know, something occurs to me as I'm listening to you. I think a lot of people either use their own name as their brand, or they come up with sort of an esoteric business name that sort of sounds kind of nice and new agey, but doesn't really get the point across. So can you speak a little bit to, or are we getting off the track a little bit in terms of kind of using our names or those esoteric kinds of names in terms of the branding?
Well, you know, let's just, naming a business is may actually be the end result of this process.
So have I jumped a little bit ahead then?
Well, we don't know actually when you begin what the name of the business might be. It could be that your name is the most compelling. Who you are, what you stand for, the promise you make. It could be that the service that you're providing is, and the way you do it is the most compelling. You know, so, you know, the naming piece is unique in and of itself. What does, you know, a lot of people say, well, your brand name must really be indicative of the work you do. But, you know, I would ask you, what does Xerox mean? You know, or 3M mean? They became... You know, they sort of grew into their brand as well. Their business doesn't say exactly what it is they do. So, you know, even though brand recognition, you know, you can shape how people will see your brand. And that's what I'm really all about, is helping you craft it.
So what you're saying is sometimes, if I'm getting you correctly, sometimes people jump the gun too soon about creating a name before they've gone through some clarity around what their brand is. Okay, got it.
And I'll tell you something else. You know, sometimes as solopreneurs, new business owners, we may not know when we begin our business what our ultimate name would be. So I always ask people at the beginning to be a little bit more loose about it, you know, and to know that some of it becomes self-evident over the course of your business, especially if you're new to consulting or new to coaching or, you know, or new to even organizing, you know, becoming a professional organizer.
Well, you talked about those four circles, so it might be good to talk, focus in on the, some of those individual elements. And one of the things you mentioned is involving our raving fans in the process of crafting this brand message. So say more about that.
Oh, I'd love to. This is one of my favorite places. You know, I take my clients or the participants through a series of about 20 exercises. And maybe the core of the exercises, 4 to 6 of those exercises are in and around those people we call our raving fans. And, you know, I ask people to wear the hat of the CEO of a brand manager, right? Just think of yourself as the head of any big brand. You would want to know what your customers are saying about you, right? So one of the things that I do is I ask, you know, participants in two areas. One is to really look at who their raving fans are, that ideal clients that they adore working with, and do a little demographic profiling on them. Who are they in terms of age, marital status, position, all of that. Just like you would if you were a major brand, right? You want to know demographically who they are, where they live, what they do, you know, where are they in their life stage. And then we also interview them in a survey form, like a major brand would, on what it is they love about us. You know, what is it that they expect will occur? What is it that they say to other people about our service or our product? And what do they see as standing in the way of our success? And when you ask your raving fans those series of questions, it's amazing, you know, the kinds of language they use about you. So, you know, people think they know what it is they bring to the marketplace, but if you don't ask how you are truly serving, you know, you don't know. And so what happens is that sometimes our raving fans actually provide us with our best taglines for our business.
Ah.
Sometimes they provide us for the with the tone, you know, that we want to carry in our advertising. So many of my clients come to me and they're so austere and serious, and yet, you know, in the way they believe they're supposed to market their business, and
mm-hmm.
yet what their raving fans say is, you know, working with you is just so fun, and yet they haven't positioned their brand as fun.
Ah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. So this interview, this doing this survey, how would, I mean, you I know you have workbooks and classes and things like that. So
sure.
I imagine that you go into much greater detail in that as far as what questions to ask and how to ask it and so on.
Oh, of course.
Do some people feel uncomfortable about doing this kind of interview survey themselves?
Oh, you know, that's a great question. And some people do, and then I suggest that they go on to using some of the Internet-provided sites that are free where they can do, you know, some anonymous surveying. But for the most part, I'd say 95% of the people that you're interviewing, and I ask people only to, you know, survey about 12 of their raving fans, is that they really respect and love your business. They get what you're all about. They know that your brand, you know, I tell them that you're rebranding your business or branding your business, and that you want them to help you articulate the essence of what you do. And people are usually so honored by that it's never gotten in the way, you know. It's actually been very affirming for many solopreneurs.
Has it sounds like in some cases people get a real sort of deeper insight that they would never have imagined.
Oh, absolutely.
By doing this.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any, I like the one about the fun, the person trying to be serious and their client saying that they're so fun. Do you have another example from the people that you've worked with that someone who got a surprising or a different message than they thought when they did these interviews?
Let me think about that for a minute.
Okay.
You know, one of two things happens. Either they're affirmed in a way
mm-hmm.
that what they thought they were delivering is in fact what they were delivering, and or that in terms of surprise, you know what happens is that we negate our gifts in the same way, you know, we seem to have a blind spot. Just like we have blind spots about our weaknesses, we seem to have blind spots about our gifts. So what happens for many people is that they think, you know, that, you know, what people are coming to them for is something all of us have. And they don't seem to understand that is, in fact, what's unique about them. So they don't bring it forward in the world because it's so easy to them, so natural to them. They think, oh, well, I can do that with one hand time, but that's no big deal.
Isn't that human nature that what comes easily for us, we tend to assume comes easily for others?
Yeah, exactly. And yet, it is what's attracting people to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's what's surprising, is that they would, you know, for many people, that they don't recognize that that's the thing they might want to lead with. Let me give you an example, too, just in looking at our raving fans, just in terms of looking at the demographics.
Uh-huh.
You know, what people have discovered is so many of us spend so little time looking at where our clients come from and who they are. It's, you know, one of my clients who is a dentist and a consultant and coach and speaker, in fact, you know, I had him really look very closely at his perfect clients, the ones he adored working with that were really ideal, and asked them to, you know, take a look at where they, you know, who they were and what they were. And when
mm-hmm.
we did that, it really helped focus on, you know, truly the next step of his business, because they came from places like Seattle, Oregon, San Francisco, California, you know, New York, Boston, you know, what I call the smile of the United States, you know, not so much, although he sat in the center of the country, his favorite clients were sort of on those coastlines.
How interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. You can see how you could then begin to focus your marketing efforts when you know where your favorite people live.
Ah. Or what their age group is, or what their professions are, or things like that.
Exactly. And even though he, as a dentist coach, I'm really using his example here, you know, may focus on dentists, what we understood about those people is that they also were in about 15 years inside their practice.
Ah.
You know, so they weren't new,
mm-hmm.
and they weren't leaving, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't looking
mm-hmm.
for exit strategies, and they were really at the core of their earning potential in 15 years deep inside. So you can see how you would begin to shape your brand message once you begin, you know, really have this sort of bird's eye view on who they are.
Mm-hmm. So it's a combination of the demographic. So it's really interesting. It's a combination of what we are attracting mm-hmm. just by the very sort of the energy flow, what we're attracting, and in addition, what we're giving off that we may not even realize that's attracting those particular people.
Yeah, so you just, very analytically, you want to look at them, you know, demographically. And then we look at what it is that is, you know, drawing them to us, what it is they get from us, what it is they count on from us, what
mm-hmm.
is that they see as part of our promise.
And that sounds like another point, that sounds like we're moving towards another point that you often make, which is identifying, you're saying that it's really important to identify the key motivations and feelings from the customers that they associate with purchasing our product or service.
Yeah.
So maybe talk a little bit about why this is important and how we can do this, how we can identify some of these key motivations and feelings.
Oh, good question. You know, just a couple of things, and probably you've heard this before, and I think we've all heard this. You know, purchase decisions are based on emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's our responsibility as a business owner and in our messaging of our business and our brand is to understand what it is people want to feel as a result of working with us.
Ah.
So if, you know, all you have to do is think about any 30-second commercial on television, and you can see that the focus is on the end feeling, right, on the end result.
Mm.
It's what it is that they ultimately are aspiring to. So, you know, I ask people then to look underneath sort of their raving fans, to look beneath the surface, be underneath the demographics, underneath, you know, what's attracting them, and then to either through interviewing or through an intuitive process to ask, you know, what is it they said they wanted, you know, the words they used, but what is it they really want? And, you know, understand what it is they're aspiring to.
Uh-huh.
But more importantly, I ask, you know, to be very clear in understanding what it is our ideal customers are most afraid of.
Ah, interesting.
Because if we don't understand what they're most afraid of, what it is they won't get if they don't achieve this, then how are we serving them?
That is so interesting. So we're seeking to discover not only what their most cherished end result would be, also what they're most afraid of not getting.
Yeah, at the end of the day. Because we are in service, right?
Yes,
we are
absolutely.
In service to that need. And I tell people when I'm listening for their brand, their unique and distinctive place in the marketplace, I'm looking for where their gifts, their strengths meet the longing of the other, you know, and we're serving that longing at that very particular crossroad, you know, which is maybe very small in terms of time and space, but people enter a crossroad where our service meets that longing, and they have a goal. So we need to, in our branding, you know, really speak to the feeling they will have, that end goal, what's in it for them
if
they work for us. But we only get there by understanding the fear they are, you know, harboring.
You just said an amazing thing, and I think it bears repeating, because this it's a very poetic description, in a sense, of what we all do. And you said that, that we're seeking that the brand, and correct me if I haven't got this right, the brand is basically articulating, in a sense, or conceptualizing that crossroads where our strengths meet their longing.
That's exactly it.
That's so poetic, and you just get it right there.
Oh, thanks.
I've never heard it put quite that way. Mm. And this concept of identifying both the end result and what people are most afraid of not getting, perhaps there's a few examples of each that you can give just to illustrate the kind of clarity and depth that you're talking about. In other words, I think some of us know what end results are, maybe more balance, more focus, or maybe there's something deeper than that, but what are some examples of end results that people want and things that people are most afraid of not getting?
So let me use a sort of a commercial idea first, because sometimes it helps to go from the bigger to the smaller.
Okay.
You know, so one of the examples that I love to use is, and let me involve you in the thinking through of this process.
Okay.
And I'll demonstrate actually what I have people do in the class, is that let's imagine that you and your husband are wanting to take a cruise.
Okay.
All right? What is it that you want to feel as a result of that, taking that cruise?
Relaxed, deeper connected with each other, a new kind of energy getting away from the everyday routine, those kinds of things.
Great. See how quickly you came up with about five things right away. So if I said, what does relaxed look like? What's the picture that says relaxed?
Lying on a chair on the deck doing not a darn thing. That pretty much covers it.
Yeah.
Having nowhere to be, no emails, no phone calls, no tasks to do. The only thing to do is to sit there next to my husband and do nothing.
Yeah, and to getting out of the everyday routine, what does that look like?
Basically the same thing, nowhere to be, no questions to answer, no phone calls, no emails. I'm not working.
If you were to develop a picture,
yeah,
you would, you know, not working might be snorkeling, or, you know, not working might be, you know, again, because it's a cruise line, you know, what is it that the cruise line brings? That innate strength that actually serves this need and the feeling you're longing for.
Right. No computers, no opportunity to even get cell phone. You know, it's like...
Yeah. So you would see that the situation is so remote.
Yeah.
There would be no way to find you, right?
Yeah. Disappearing for a little while, I think, sounds lovely. Yeah.
So exactly. So what happens to many solopreneurs is that they go into the world marketing their business like, now imagine the captain of that cruise ship, and they walk as if they were walking around saying, I'd like you to see our engine room, please.
Huh.
You know? And here's what the bedrooms look like. Our sheets are nice. You know? Can you imagine? That is not what people, they expect you to have an engine room. You're a cruise line. Expect you to have, you know, rooms with nice sheets and good food. You're a cruise line. What they want to know is that at the end of the day, as a result of going on that cruise, they are going to feel relaxed, connected, not, and that's, those are the pictures we have to give our clients.
That's such a fascinating example because, of course, if I'm going on a cruise, I'm not interested in the engine room.
The ports of call even sometimes.
Yeah, well, I'm not interested in you know, watching the kitchen prep, you know.
Yeah. or the credentials that captain has.
I mean, I'm more interested in knowing that I'm going to be pampered, and there's a spa on board, and we can get his and her massages, and et cetera, I mean, so I think the point that I'm getting here is that a lot of us entrepreneurs tend to give either too much info and of the wrong kind to our clients. Like, this is my background, or this is how my company works, or whatever.
Here are my credentials.
Right.
And so we're, you know, how boring is that? Because what people want to know, remember, we buy, purchase decisions are based on emotion. They want to know that, A, you get what it is that, you know, they're longing for, and that they're going to feel at the end of the day what it is they want to feel. So we have to get there. So we have to create that picture for them. And, you know, that's what branding is about, is it's creating that kind of bridge, you know, between, you know, what it is that we're providing, the promise that we're willing to make, and what it is they're feeling, wanting to feel, and, you know, to be relieved from freedom. So even if you were to look at your own business, I'd say, so what is it that people want to feel at the end? And I have people list those words, and say, and what does that look like? Because we want to be able to create that picture.
And what about, what are some of the things that people are afraid of not getting? Say just a little bit about that so we can be clear about that.
Okay, so let's say that I was working with a business consultant, you know, and he actually works with, you know, we went through this whole process, and he determined that the people that he works best with are those organizations who are entrepreneurial, and they're growing fast, and their biggest fear is that their team is not ready for the next level of change. So that if he can't get them out of the ruts, you know, that of the business that they're in, that they're not going to be able to step up to this next level. He doesn't know how to get them to that next level either. He can just see his biggest fear is that his business, because he doesn't know how to change the perception, you know, within his human capital, would crash. So, you know, the way the brand, that consultant then began to speak to that, is then he spoke to the end result.
And you know what, what's so fascinating about hearing you speak about this is that not only, of course, does this make so much sense in terms of branding, for those of us who are in conversation with whether or not someone's going to hire us, whether as a coach or as a consultant or as a speaker, to explore what end results do you want, what does that look like and sound like and feel like and taste like and smell like for you, and also to look at, if everything stays the same, what are you afraid of not getting? Those are such important questions
to know. And, you know, at the end of the day, is that something that you're good at doing? You know, sometimes once you hear what their fear is and or what their end result might be, maybe that's not your innate strength, you know. It's always where our strengths, our gifts, meet their longing at a particular crossroad, right?
And what might be useful, because you've mentioned this thing about innate strength several times, say a little bit more about how we can use the awareness of our innate strengths to really get clear about our brand.
Is it a question about how do we determine what they are, or am I assuming that people already have a...
Well, both, maybe. I think both. How do you define, and I think I've heard you define innate strengths, so how do we determine them? I think part of that was from you said of doing those surveys, and maybe how else we can determine them, and then how do we leverage that?
Oh, great. So, you know, I always have my people do a series of things in determining what their innate strengths are. Of course, one of them is, as you know, through the surveys, getting the information for how the outside world sees you in terms of your strengths. But the other way I ask, and one of the exercises I have people go through, is that I ask them to do a bit of an analysis on what I call their five peak experiences.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, so I actually have them look at those moments in life or business when they felt so alive, when they wanted to just pinch their cheeks and say, oh, this is so good, I can't stand it, you know? And so I ask them, I say, well, who are you in that moment? What are you doing? Who else is there? You know, is this, what service are you providing? Because that, and, you know, it's amazing of when they do these five little stories for me, three or four of them will have pretty much the same sort of tenor. And so if you're going to develop a business that doesn't include the opportunity to do what we might call your genius work 80% of the time, you're going to hate your business at the end of the day. So I want to make sure that people are bringing forward into the world as their brand that which keeps them, you know, their fire lit.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. And what a great way, because a lot of times people say, I don't really know what my strengths are. I mean, I'm good at this and I'm good at that, but being good at something is not the same as that being your gift.
Right. Well, let me give you an example of how it can backfire.
Okay.
You know, for people. All right, this is a story of an attorney who worked in a rather large firm who is developing a business as a coach, as a lawyer's coach. And he did his five peak experiences. Let me, I can't remember them totally, but one of them was that when he felt most alive, it was when he was a younger guy, and he used to work on those oil rigs that are way out in the Atlantic. And there would be 5 to 6 to 8 guys. They were all working on these huge tight shifts. They had to communicate to each other through symbols and signs and sounds. Each of them were, you know, in sort of a deadlock force for their own safety.
Yeah.
Very alive, very compelling. The other one is when he, you know, feels most alive, was this piece about, you know, one of those, you know, those competitive bike racing teams, you know? You know, when they bicycle ride like geese, you know?
yes, where the ones behind get the draft of the ones in front.
Exactly. Again, you know, very tight communication, simple, you know, laser, like intuitive signals. You know, the other piece when he feels most alive is in this courtroom working with a group of other lawyers in developing the strategy to win a case. So here's a guy who wanted to develop a business as a solopreneur.
Yeah, he's got to be really connected. Obviously, you've got to be really connected as a team. Otherwise, he's going to wither away.
Right. You know, so and leaving the law business, you know, and it forgetting that when he's most alive, he's working in non-hierarchical structures. You know, where the everybody on the team is, you know, presenting their very best, and they're working very closely and intuitively. So you know, it's sort of a check. You know, to say, if I'm going to be developing this brand, this business, and I'm doing it as a solopreneur, and there's nothing in my history that even suggests that I work the best alone, then, you know, I could say, maybe you need to reconsider how you structure this business or brand.
You know, it's so fascinating because what I'm hearing in all of, and all the things that you're saying is that, in a sense, developing a brand is a journey of self-discovery. And in order to hone in on what is going to attract the most people to you and also to whom you're going to target your efforts, if you don't really know yourself, you're not going to be anywhere near as successful as you could be.
Sure. And I think what's really funny about this is that so many of us believe that great brand advertising that we see for commercial brands is like marketing flim-flam.
Uh-huh.
But in fact, it's the same process. That's what they're doing. They're going through a process of discovery that's, you know, the product's innate strengths and what their raving fans are saying about them, because they truly want to meet the need in the marketplace. You know, it is just a process, you know, that in its own right is very sort of very pure and clean and helps define what's compelling about us.
Now, close a little loop for me here, because we talked about determining some of our innate strengths, and that exercise about the five peak experience moments is a really cool way of getting there. So close the loop for me about how do we meet the client's longing using these inner strengths. Maybe you can give that lawyer as an example, the one who the teamwork piece was so important for him.
Well, so what he ultimately is building is an organization that would meet all the needs of a young attorney who's developing. So whether it is presentation skills, and he would be doing sort of the coaching piece that we would all know, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or whether it's the writing skills, or, you know, it's all that.
So where the longing was that he discovered was
his strengths.
Right, and attorneys building their practices, their longing was to be more professional and more polished and more competent?
In all of that, whether it's writing, presentation.
Right.
And so that he could develop a team, it really just opened a door.
To develop a team of experts in those different areas.
That would bring
those
all
needs.
Those things into a firm.
Excellent.
Right.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, it can be really fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it also I discover for people is that and they get sort of it. Sometimes what happens is they get at this precipice and they see it. You know, oh my God, this is my life's work.
Yeah.
You know,
wow.
And it can get pretty scary too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so people either embrace it as the, you know, an aha that say, oh my God, this is finally how I can articulate and
mm-hmm.
who I work with. Here's the, you know, here's what I do and who I do it for and where I do it best and
mm-hmm.
how I do it best, you know, and to meet their need. But knowing that can sometimes be very intimidating.
Yeah, it's kind of that exhilarating, scary place all at once.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, do I leap off the cliff and have faith that the net's going to be there? or maybe I'll even fly. I'm not quite sure what's going to happen yet.
Yeah, it is an act of, it is a leap of faith.
Yeah, it sounds that way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to make sure that we talk about something that you mentioned earlier in the conversation that was intriguing to me, and that was the importance of understanding how to craft our reputation before we have one.
Mm-hmm.
So please talk about that.
Mm-hmm. You know, we can. So I think one of the fallacies for entrepreneurs is that we believe that if we do good work, which is also true, but if we do good work and provide great service, and our price point is correct, that our reputation will build and it will create its own groundswell,
uh-huh.
you know, and that will then fill our pipeline. And that the reputation in itself will be revealed over time.
Yes, magically.
Somehow, yeah.
The elves will do it or something.
The elves.
Yeah,
I'm looking for those guys.
Yeah, the elves will come out at night and do things magically that will make that happen.
Right. But I tell people that they can craft their reputation in advance of having one in the same way major advertisers do. You know, there are, you know, I probably can't use names here, but there are a number of, you know, I've worked in the automotive business for a very long time who were launching new brands. And when they went to launch their brand, before the brand was born, they were telling people how to perceive them.
Oh, yeah.
They're, you know, they're crafting it. And so they, And actually, what's interesting is one of these luxury manufacturers who entered the marketplace about 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
you know, looked at not the car industry, but in fact, you know, they looked at Steinway pianos.
As meaning,
yeah, because what they wanted was to own the same position Steinway owns.
Yeah, that kind of reputation.
That reputation, that mm-hmm. reputation for craftsmanship and service, and you know, you've arrived in as a pianist if you're playing Steinway, right?
And you always know that wherever you are on the planet, if you sit down at a Steinway piano, it's always going to have a great touch and a great tone, and I mean, there's no question about it.
Right. So that became their objective. As a car, is to own that. So how does that shape your messaging about your business if you know that your ultimate objective is to be perceived in that way? So what I do is I have people go through a series of exercises again looking at that objective. So that's, you know, ultimately I want to be perceived in this way. So they may not be the Steinway today because their brand isn't even launched. But you can tell people about their craftsmanship, you know, the quality of service. These are promises you're making.
Uh-huh.
You know, that puts you on the road.
And then, of course, it's important to keep the commitments.
Oh, well, forget it. If you can't,
yeah.
you know, I tell people you only make promises that you're willing to keep.
Yeah. otherwise, it's going to backfire very badly, isn't it?
Oh yeah, the business is over. If you know, your commercial, if your brand or your messaging is going out there, making promises that you don't deliver on,
mm-hmm.
forget about it. The brand is over, and we probably know commercial brands where that was true.
Mm-hmm.
That's flim flam.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you know what I really like to do is to make sure that, you know, going back again to their innate strengths and what their raving fans say about them is all in line with how it is they want to be positioned or perceived.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, your brand message makes a promise that you're able to keep consistently, you know, over time.
I like that. Your brand message makes a promise that you are consistently able to keep over time.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great. You just have a poetic way of expressing these concepts, which really resonates with me, and I'm sure with a lot of other people who are listening, because it makes sense. I think that a lot of solopreneurs are sort of have poetic souls in a way,
mm-hmm.
because they're going off the beaten path.
Oh, sure. That's what I love about them.
Yeah, and me too. And so I think that's why the way that you're delivering this message makes a lot of sense, because it's not all cut and dried in business. It's about keeping some of the soul and poetry in the process of building the brand.
Mm-hmm.
So that's quite fascinating to me. So we've touched on three of the 4 points that you mentioned early in the hour, the innate strengths, the raving fans, and how do we want to be perceived. So talk to me for just a couple of minutes about what we can learn from our competitors.
Okay, great. You know, it's a juicy place. It's one of those places people, you know, I can't tell you how many times I hear from solopreneurs, oh, I really don't have any competitors.
Uh-huh.
I said, oh, you've just created the worst mistake you could for yourself.
Uh-huh.
Because at the end of the day, your client or prospective client is going to categorize you, you know. So you need to help by understanding who you really want them to see as your competitors.
Oh.
What category you belong in.
Huh. Oh, that's very interesting. Say more about that.
Yeah. So, you know, on a broader scale, let's say, and, you know, I always like to go big so people can see it easier.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you're an automotive manufacturer again. You know, why would I want to put myself in the competitive, if I'm a Kia or something, you know, a small economical car, why would I put myself in the competitive set of a luxury car? I'll never win there.
I want
to place myself in the competitive set wherein I belong. So once I understand that, because I want those people who are shopping me to be the appropriate shoppers.
Yes, yes.
And they're going to categorize me anyway. Then I need to know who else is there, and how am I different from them.
So in other words, let me see if I can extrapolate that a little bit. So for, let's say, a coach or a consultant, for example, to put oneself in the category of an executive coach,
mm-hmm.
of course, that clarifies where you are as opposed to a life coach. And also, you just said something about you love to work with the solopreneurs, and there are also other people, I'm sure, in branding and in coaching who
oh, yeah.
love to work with the corporates and the people who are much more into structure and a different way of doing things. And to know that we're in this particular category and to recognize that these are these kinds of people are our peers.
Right, not only our peers, but who we're going to be compared with. Whether
right.
we like it or not,
right.
Our potential clients will put us in a category. I'm telling you, tell them which category you belong in. They're going to. The mind needs to categorize. They need to stick you in a slot.
So it's better for us to create the slot than let them do it.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, and then once you have chosen the slot you want to be in, then who else is there? Because you want to see how you want to help them understand immediately how you're different. So let me give you an example. This is sort of simple.
Okay.
Self-evident, maybe, and again, using somebody I've already used as an example, one of my clients who is a dentist and a coach, consultant, speaker. Right? He, we began to look at those competitors. You know, who are those people who are acting as consultants and coaches to dentists? Well, you know, and once we began to see what they were doing, the seminars they were providing, the nature of the work they were
yes.
providing, we looked at those places that he is different. Well, 95% of those people aren't and have never been dentists.
Oh, that would be a nice competitive edge.
Isn't that a nice little brand? Isn't that something you might want to lead with?
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
It's pretty much that he could say, I feel your pain.
You not only do I feel your pain, but ask yourself, have they been there?
Yeah, do they know what it's like?
Yeah.
They sure don't, yeah.
And, yeah, plus I'm still one. You know, I'm still practicing. So, you know, you begin to see, and also those people who were calling on those dentists were really doing sort of management business strategies, and he was wanting to work more on, like many of us coaches, on creating work-life balance.
I see.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's different places that you can own in the competitive framework, but first of all, you have to understand and decide which framework you're going to operate in. And then who else is operating there.
Uh-huh.
And how are you different from them?
Excellent. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Well, we've got about 7 or 8 minutes left, so and I want to take a couple of minutes before we end and make sure people know some of the special offers and things that you have. But there's one more question, and you actually started to answer that question when you said that one of the big mistakes that people make is saying that they don't have any competition. So what are a few of the other really big mistakes that you see over and over again when it comes to branding that people tend to do?
The mistake that breaks my heart is that, I do this work privately, but I also do this as in a teleclass forum and,
yes.
and as a workshop. And probably the six or the eight people that might be in the workshop, there's always two. There has to be, you know, who everyone can see really the essence of the brand and the game they're meant to play in this world. And the part that breaks my heart is the courage, you know, is the courage to step forward in that way, not, you know, ever believing that there would be someone, you know, that would be willing to buy. And, you know, it's that part always, it breaks the heart. But I try to tell people, if you have raving fans now, what is it that allows you not to think that there are 1,000 more people already looking for you?
Uh-huh.
If you just were to blink, I tell people, blink your message so that your tribe can find you easier, more easily.
Oh, you know, that's a great message. It's sort of, I think what I hear you saying is that some people don't seem to be able to take that leap of faith.
Step boldly.
In that they have something special.
Yeah. You know, and you know what happens is the gift of having done this work with solopreneurs. I mean, I did this work in corporations and
yes.
nonprofits and whatever, you know, for many years before. But doing this work with solopreneurs, I see so many of them come back to me, you know, a year later and say, oh, I'm there now. You know, and like sometimes it takes, you know, about a year for some people to grow into the belief.
Uh-huh.
You know, so they usually nail it, though.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great message, though, of also time and patience and allowing yourself to grow into it and having the faith and the courage to allow to work the process. It's not an instantaneous thing is what I'm hearing you say.
Sometimes it is. I mean, you know, for some people, they go, aha, 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 and,
uh-huh.
you know, and they're able to grasp it. They've
uh-huh.
been on the edge of it for so long, you know, they finally have given birth to the complete concept, and they're able to move like,
uh-huh.
you know, gung-ho forward. And, you know, we're all different.
Yes.
And some of us, you know, maybe need to incubate and feel uncomfortable, like, you know, someone said to me, I just feel like I'm walking around in this new concept like I'm, you know, wearing Bozo shoes. You know? My feet are flapping. And it takes a little while to grow into this fuller idea.
Mm.
You know? So, you know, I've seen it all. So
and that's a great message that we all come to things differently and we need to honor that in ourselves.
Sure.
And honor the process and you know, not in a sense, not compare ourselves to others, but say, okay, I guess this is the process that's happening for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really wonderful point. Thank you. Well, I want to make sure that people know how to get in touch with you, and also some of the special offers that you have for the listeners of this recording. Your website is www.marketingu, that's marketing and the letter U, .net, correct?
Yeah, that's it.
And to get an email to you, it's Deborah Valle, V-A-L-L-E,
D-E-B-R-A.
Right, D-E-B-R-A-V-A-L-L-E at marketingu.net.
Mm-hmm.
And Deb's got a couple of offers for us. First of all, if you want to get her free e-newsletter, it's called Fuel for Marketing You. They can sign up at your website, correct?
That's right.
So just go to marketingu.net.
And there will be a button to subscribe to the e-news.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And Deborah's got some special discounts for practice pay clients. First of all, if you want to sign up for, and these will be posted along with the recording, if you want to sign up for her teleclass, Selling the Brand When It's You, there will be a special code, and you'll receive $30 off when you use the promotion code.
Right, and what I'd like people to know is that I offer the class about three times a year.
Excellent.
So, you know, if you go to the website and you can see that the class doesn't meet your schedule at this time, just know that within, you know, another 6 or 8 weeks, there'll be another offering.
And the promotion code, so you can actually go and register for the class online, and there is a slot in there to put in a promotion code, correct?
That's right. And in order to get the benefit of the discount, they'd have to use the code number.
And I think I'll just give that on the recording, if that's okay.
Oh, sure.
And that's S as in Sam, T as in Thomas, B as in boy, STB, let's probably say
selling the brand.
Mm-hmm. And then PPS.
Practice Today Solution.
Right. So that's our special promo code, STBPPS. Mm-hmm. And Deb also has an e-book, Selling the Brand When It's You, and she's offering us a 30% discount by using a special link, and it's one of those really long links, so that will be posted along with the recording, so you'll be able to get that. So we've got lots of opportunities to gather and act on more of Deb's branding wisdom.
Oh, yeah, this is great. I've had so much fun talking to you about branding, Nancy. This has been just a joy for me. And I just thank you so much for allowing me to be on your educational program and letting people know how I approach branding.
Well, Deb, this has been a wonderful interview. I've learned, for me personally, some great things, and I know that the people who are listening to this are going to get some really excellent and immediately useful ideas. That's the key. I love, particularly for me, just some of the practical ways that you've suggested to help us get more clarity about what our gifts are and how we bring them to the world has been quite useful. So thank you so much for taking this time to be with us and to share your experience and your wisdom about branding and kind of a not just about branding but about how to step up into our own gifts and talents in a way. So it's been very enlightening. So Deborah Valley, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Nancy Gerber once again on behalf of Practice Pay Solutions, thanking you for listening, and until next time, we will talk to you soon. Thanks again, Deb. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.